Well, hello everybody, and we are continuing with our rays and initiations commentaries, and we're on number 57. I want to read the, we've been talking about dualities and how the dualities in relation to each other create the necessary point of tension. One has to reach, however, for the higher possibility before the point of tension is possible. This is the paragraph from immediately before, when we stop, that is. Light may enter your mind in this connection if you will constantly bear in mind the essential duality of manifestation itself, the negative and the positive poles present within the consciousness of every form. Okay, a little bit more here. The achieved point of fusion, the result of active and positive work and effort, you know, where you gather together all of your abilities at a certain point, bring them together. It's not quite the full point of tension yet, but it will be. And by this means, is rendered negative to that which is being invoked. So we call together all that we have at the present moment, and then it becomes negative receptive to that which is invoked, that is the higher of the pairs of opposites. And by this means, another and positive point of tension can be achieved. Initiation, a dramatic and a major point of tension, connotes essentially the fusion of the negative and positive aspects. Owing to this in all initiatory processes, it is the will of the disciple which is active. And you see how all of this higher type of work deals with acts of will. It is the will of the disciple which is active and which produces, first of all, a fusion of what he has where it stands, where he stands, and as a consequence, the appearance of a point of tension. All right, well, now the Tibetan is going to illustrate how this works, because up to this point, we've had some, dramatic statements, but it's been a little bit on the abstract side. Let me see if I can go back a little further. It is through the activity of the lower mind that fusion with the soul is brought about with successive intensifying points of tension. Points of tension ever rise, as we are never satisfied ultimately with the boundary we have created and that which we have gathered within the boundary. It is through the activity established between the higher and lower mind that fusion with the spiritual triad becomes possible. And that is the normal gap as we consider it. Let's see if I can find that. Let's see. I'll do it this way. And hopefully we can, that's it. This is the normal gap. And there is a relationship between the monastic permanent atom and the mental unit that is created in order to span that gap. It is through the activity established between higher and lower mind that fusion with the spiritual triad becomes possible, with points of tension arising at many points along the bridge. We did discuss that idea, and there are, as the Tibetan says, successive points of tension as we strive ever higher and try to reach into the spiritual triad, try to understand its quality, its energy, impression. It is through the activity of pure reason that fusion with the hierarchy becomes possible. So always there is a base in any duality. And if that base becomes sufficiently invocative, sufficiently intense, it will summon the attention of the higher of the dualities with which we are dealing. Okay, and these points of tension, initiations are called points of tension. Let's see what the Tibetan says as he attempts, well, he did not attempt, he's going to do it. He's going to illustrate this. DK says there are still higher points of tension, but it is with those called initiations that we are dealing at this time. And if we have achieved initiation, we are holding a particular point of tension. We have our will sustained at a certain vibratory level, and we're not going to usually descend below that level. So once a point of tension is stabilized, it is used as kind of a plateau below which the consciousness will not ordinarily descend. But of course, every point of tension, in a way, what shall I say, wears itself out or becomes less than completely interesting, and always the spirit, which is essentially absolute infinity, demands more and more and more, and so ever rising successive points of tension will be created. One has to be so careful in reading the Tibetan's words because he's very subtle, and he includes much that we might not understand, but is meant maybe for someone with a higher level of understanding than we have. So always there is more. And when I look at this that we discussed in our last meeting, I have a great desire to go over it and over it. See, here's what a duality is considered to be when building points of tension. We're not supposed to, this is so important, focus on producing the point of tension. We're remembering the duality of life and that there's always more and higher. And that which is at any given moment of endeavor is part of the duality, the lower part. And that with which he can fuse and blend, this sum total of achievement. And so this is the higher of the duality, the higher component of the duality must be remembered. And if we are quite satisfied at holding our present point of tension, it will not intensify. It will not become sufficiently strong for a repolarization at a still higher point of tension. I mean, I think sometimes we get that feeling that we are indeed moving along, and that we're seeing more and more than we saw before, and maybe there are breakthrough moments, but you do begin to realize that your consciousness has been limited compared with what it is right now, and that during that period of limitation, we just didn't see or consciously understand what we do see now. So ever there is more, and in a way, we are always in a darkened room relative to the revelation which lies on ahead. Well, maybe that's a bit of a rambling preamble, but I, just wanted to sort of go over some of the important things that we had just dealt with in our last session, maybe a day ago or so. So let's say if we are of the first degree and someone else is of the second degree and someone else is of the third degree, each one of those initiates or initiate types is holding its consciousness and its general energy condition at differing points of tension, which are successive. Okay, well, that's a sort of a 10-minute ramble through. Forgive me if it's not quite as coherent as I would love it to be, but it is what it is at the moment. Sometimes when you're doing these commentaries, you have the choice of whether you will stop for perfection or whether you will try as best you can to complete them in the hope that others will see little strands of connection and possibility that will take them into areas of thought that maybe you have not yet achieved in presenting. Okay, anyway, since he says, let me illustrate, we needed a little bit of a background. In the work of creating the Antikarana, the disciple, first of all, and as far as in him lies, what should we say, according to his present stage of development and capacity, and through the medium of positive mental labor, so this is active and not passive mental work. The mind is not initially in a receptive mode, but is creating and guarding and sustaining and corralling. You know, it's holding. Focuses himself upon the mental plane. DK does seem to repeat himself quite a bit, I think, in the hope that through this repetition we will gather at least something of this very abstruse, interior, scientific, spiritually scientific approach. So the disciple focuses himself on the mental plane. The fusion of the soul and of time, personality, is then present. Well, I did check this out. There is an error. One of those errors in the actual text of the CD-ROM, it appears. The fusion of the soul and of the personality, not time personality, the personality is then present and is the result of positive activity. I mean, in such a massive transcription as this, errors will appear from time to time, and we just have to see whether things actually make sense. The fusion of the soul and the personality is then present and is the result of positive activity, and the focus, in the lower part of the process is on the plane of mind. Let's just do it a little differently, is within the lower mind. The quality and the vibratory nature of that positive focal point, okay, it's a positive focal point at first, and it is on the mental plane. Positive focal point on the mental plane is then rendered negative to the higher vibration or contact which is evoked by the existent radiance or potency. So let's just say the tension producing radiance and potency has to be sufficient to invoke the higher of the dualities towards which one is striving. Okay. So he's giving this to us in another way. I really don't see any other way but to read this over again and again and again. It's not so many pages. And as a result, it just enters into the very fabric of your thought. And so no matter where you are, you won't get lost in this process. So the quality and the vibratory nature of that positive focal point on the mental plane is then rendered negative to that higher vibration or contact which is invoked by the existent radiance and potency. And existent, in other words, it already exists according to what a man has achieved and has gathered from his achievement. Okay. The response from the opposite poll is, if the disciple could but realize it, immediate. It always seems delayed, doesn't it? Okay. So often, the response from the higher poll seems delayed, but this is just because of the interference and insensitivity, but simply because of interference and the insensitivity of the personality. And to the extent possible, determined by the disciple's point of attainment. So the higher the attainment and the more greater the tension, the more its invocatory power, the more the invocatory power of the present point of attainment, the more immediate and noticeable and powerful the response from the higher pole. The invocative-evocative activity produces a point of tension. Okay. Well, anyway, maybe we should call this, in a way, a new point of tension, or a more intense point of tension than had been created by the gathering and focusing, but not yet, not as yet, a point of fusion with the positive pole. So we have the gathered energies focused at a preliminary, wish I could type, point of tension. Then we have the energies of the positive pole, which are coming into relationship with the gathered and focused energies, and then a new point of tension resulting from this interaction. A new, let us say, and more intense point of tension resulting from this interaction. But not yet the fusion of the negative and positive poles, which is desirable, and which, from a certain perspective, is initiation. So let's get that FACP from a certain perspective. Okay. Now, you know, as I read this, I'm just rereading it after, I think, a number of years, and I'll repeat myself, very impressed by the need to read and reread it. From that point of tension, which is a new one, a newer point of tension, and more intense than the original focusing, the disciple works at the creation of the antikarana, and let's just say there are energies restrained within a held ring-pass knot, and these energies form the basis of the work to be done in projecting. This will eventually bring about the desired fusion between soul and personality and the spiritual triad. So what we really have here, we have a point of tension from which we are working, but not yet the fusion, which will come about with persistent, correct work. Okay. The same general process dictates all the desired fusions and produces those points of tension, which are the secrets of all growth. It's as if, maybe I can put it this way, at least for myself, points of tension evoke the possibility of fusion. So, and we might say that points of tension between the previously gathered energies and the new and higher energies towards which we are striving bring about the fusion of that which of well of the energies which have been gathered and the higher energies towards which we strive. Now, I think we can see, you know, how much we can ponder on this, as it were. These points of fusion and of tension, the disciple consciously endeavors to bring about. So the idea is really work with your point of tension in order to achieve the fusion towards, let's call it the next fusion, which is intended or striven for. All right, so, you know, DK is trying to present this to us in a way that we will understand, but always, you know, when we're working here, we have the dualities in mind. We're not just like building up a point of tension. We're gathering our potencies, the energies of the personality and of the mind, and we're focusing intensely according to our point of attainment. And this is a kind of a point of tension which calls into evocative response a still higher source of energies at a higher point of tension, and there's an interaction, and a newer point of tension is increased, and one works from that newer and higher point of tension, and eventually this is going to draw the higher and the lower of the pairs of opposites, or the two aspects of the duality together, into a state of fusion. So this is all the secret of all growth. The same general process dictates all desired fusions and produces those points of tension, which are the secret of all growth. Now, how can we put this? If you want to grow in your capacity to fuse various dualities within your energy system, then you have to learn to work with a point of tension which evokes that fusion. And of course, with the there's so many parts of this, really, you know. We hold the point of tension, but we also imagine, and our imagination builds a bridge, and the bridge that is imagined passes through the retained substance, which is held at a point of focus, and this helps to reorganize and intensify that point of tension. And the higher source that we are invoking has an evocative response and begins to interact with the invoking source, which is what we are, and creates a still higher point of tension from which it's possible for the disciple to work. And that still higher point of tension is going to draw together the poles until they are integrated and fused. But obviously these are just words, and you might find other words for this. And what we have to do is attempt repeatedly to do this very thing and see what it feels like, see what is the achievement. But always there is something higher, and we should not forget it. And intense focusing is going to bring that something higher within the range of our consciousness until it becomes a stable point from which we can work. This fusion of the higher and lower becomes a new position, a stable new position from which we can work as we explore what this new position or point of tension reveals, become used to it, learn how to wield the energies, but then eventually outgrow them until we begin to evoke through invocation something still higher. I think, you know, the Tibetans done a lot better job explaining what all this is than I'm doing, but I'm trying to say what it means to me and the thoughts that come to me when I read what he says. These are the broad and general lines governing the initiatory process. You know, it, the progression of initiations demands that we always reach for something higher and more capacious. A larger ring has not of greater depth. And when that is achieved, and when the higher point of tension or energy source is fused with the one from which we are aspiring, then a new initiation is achieved. We don't lose what we have achieved earlier, but greater expanse and greater depth, which connotes a new initiation, is achieved. Okay. The work here indicated is followed by all disciple initiates of all degrees, and we might call them at first probationary initiates, and even by the Lord of the world himself, we might say, always reaching for new possibilities on the way back to the ultimate universal source, the universal logos. Okay. Whatever that is, you know, really. So the Lord of the world, he in his high place holds the manifested world of energies in a state of fusion. Just as we have to hold together all that we have gathered and all that we are used to working with energetically. Points of tension successively occur as the consequence of growing divine realization within these forms of intelligent activity of love, wisdom, and of the will to good. Points of tension successively occur as a consequence of growing divine realization. So always new realizations are achieved from new and higher, more intense points of tension. Points of tension successively occur as a consequence of growing. See, you know, he's telling us really how we grow into spiritual. DK is telling us how we grow into greater spiritual consciousness and energy and capacity to wield higher energies. So points of tension successfully occur as a consequence of growing divine realization within these forms of intelligent activity, like a mental body, of love wisdom, like an astral body or a Buddhic body, and of the will to good, such as an atmic body, or maybe as a reflection, the etheric vehicle. But really, the will to good is so potent that it will pervade the entire personality. These points of tension vary according to the divine purpose and the individual initiatory problem of Sanat Kumara himself. Can we have any idea of this? We're sometimes told, you know, a little bit that the planetary logos, of whom Sanat Kumara is an emanation, is suffering from the problem of personality, and that he has the psychology of a divine rebel, and that he's working things out on the fourth level of the cosmic astral plane, but has not yet achieved what Venus has achieved in terms of the fifth level of the cosmic astral plane, counting from below. So these points of tension vary. I mean, you know, what we do and what the great Lord does have analogies, okay. So, but he's here talking about Sanat Kumara basically growing into greater divine realization. So SK is growing into greater divine realization. So he has his vehicles too, through which he is working out this divine realization, and they are cosmic vehicles. He's got the, in a way, the entire cosmic physical plane, etheric and dense physical. He has the cosmic astral body, and he has the cosmic mental body of a lower kind. We're not yet talking so much about the cosmic egoic lotus. So anyway, points of tension are launching points. Maybe that's one good way of thinking of them. They are launching points into new and higher points of tension with unaccustomed energies, at least unaccustomed. The individual, whether a great being like Sanat Kumara or someone like us, is not accustomed to dealing with these energies into which they are launched. So these points of tension vary according to the divine purpose and the individual initiatory problem of Sanat Kumara. Well, DK has hinted at what some of this is, but he's not in a position to really describe it, nor are we in a position to understand it. Okay. So. Okay. As he, Sanat Kumara, submits to the cosmic initiatory process, we might say, under the solar logos, and even under the cosmic logos, of which our solar logos is a part. Because there are already links with our planetary logos and the stars of the Great Bear, the logoi of the Great Bear. So there are those connections, and the great being who is planetary logos and his emanation Sanat Kumara are linked with stupendous beings such as these great rishis. Such a point of tension of stupendous magnitude is present in the world today from the point of view of Sanat Kumara. And that's one we want, I think. Point of view. So you kind of wonder why everything is so intense today. And of course, the average individual, and even we, you know, who study these things, cannot really know or have any truly detailed idea of why things are the way they are. But let's just say that Sanat Kumara is in the process, or the planetary logos through our particular chain and our globe via Sanat Kumara is in the process of passing through a very great initiatory event. Actually, a fourth subsidiary initiation on the way to a second cosmic initiation. And just kind of look over Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 384, to get the idea of that. So Sanat Kumara is undergoing a cosmic initiation in an intense way at this point. So I'm going to kind of put that down. Sanat Kumara is undergoing cosmic, a strong initiatory events in the cosmic initiatory process at this time. Okay. So such a point of tension of stupendous magnitude is present in the world today, certainly on our globe and in our chain, which seems to be the focus not only of our planetary logos, but of our solar logos. So let's just say this is so because our globe and chain are focal points now in the initiatory process, not only of our planetary logos, but of our solar logos. So who's working through our planetary scheme? Just as our planetary logos is working through our particular fourth chain and its fourth globe. The intention behind this realized fusion and tension is to enable humanity as an integral part of the divine body of manifestation to move forward into greater light and nearer the heart of love, which is hierarchy. So this involves the human kingdom. Okay, let's do that. And I know what's going to happen here, so I'm just going to make that HK. This involves the human kingdom and also something higher, and also the fourth creative hierarchy of human monads. As this takes place, it is taking place, the hierarchy itself moves nearer to the conscious fusion with humanity. So what do we do? We see another duality which is in process of fusion through an evoked point of tension. So let's see, another duality, and let's call that humanity and hierarchy, are moving closer because humanity is in a point of tension which is evoking the attention of the hierarchy. And this point of tension of humanity exists because hierarchy is invoking it. At least that is one reason. Also within humanity, there arises this longing, this striving that comes from within itself. So humanity is, because of its own unfoldment, reaching towards something higher, and that something higher is realizing the intention and the tension of humanity and is further invoking it, calling forth this greater intensity of invocation in humanity. So there's a dual approach going on here. The point of tension thereby achieved, and this has not yet appeared, we say sufficiently, not yet, sufficiently will produce the kingdom of God on earth in exoteric form, and we might expect this as a result of the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy during the age of Aquarius. Okay. And there's one that we want as well, Age of Aquarius. And here we go, Age of Aquarius. Well, the king, you know, it's going to be a long time before the entire kingdom of God is manifest entirely, fully, but a big start can be achieved during the impending Age of Aquarius. So we certainly are in the antechamber of great possibilities. We are being drawn towards great possibilities, and sometimes we may forget this, and it would not be wise for us so to do. We will now consider one of the lesser, though essential, fusions which must be achieved by the disciple, producing consequently in his life a point or points, successive points of tension. And this is the fusion of the master's consciousness with that of the disciple. Well, you know, these particular programs are not being arranged for exactly one-hour slots, so I'm trying to figure out whether I should go ahead here, how far I should go ahead, or whether... Well, I think I will go ahead, just in case in the future the one-hour presentation is more useful. I could have stopped here at 40 minutes, but I won't. We'll take up this new subject, the fusion of the master's consciousness with that of the disciple. Obviously, always there's the duality. There's the present, achieved state of the disciple's consciousness, and then there is the much higher consciousness of the master. And the lesser is invoking the higher, but some of that invocation is because the higher is invoking the lower. And as a result of this dual invocation, evocations occur. The higher is evoked, and the lower invoking center, the disciple, is also evoked into greater invocation. All right, well, I used to get confused about these terms, invocation and evocation, but basically invocation is asking, and evocation is the response which comes from the asking. I try to keep that, you know, as simple as may be possible. Earlier I stated that the disciple's private life automatically falls once he has been accepted by the master into three stages. This is the stage of accepted, or ADS, or is it ADS? ADSS. If it's ADSS, no. But that'd be a good one to put in. ADSS. Aha. I already have accepted discipleship, but it's not in, it's the word add, which is not a great place for it. Accepted discipleship. Okay. So, the stage of accepted discipleship. So, and this occurs, between the first and second initiation, usually when the second initiation is esoterically in sight. It may be in the present incarnation, in the next couple, but at least one is moving towards that second initiation. Okay, so this is the disciple's private life, the stage in which the lower concrete mind and the higher mind are related in such a manner that the lower mind is not only soul illumined, but it is subject also to the impression of the spiritual triad. So this is the first stage of building the antikarana proper. It's not the stage of contacting the soul from the point of view of the personality or from the mental unit. It is a further stage, and it has to do with the building of the antikarana as DK is instructing us using the words of power. Okay. Now, the disciple's private life, that's what we're talking about, and what he has achieved. So in other words, let's remember that these stages are stages which are which follow upon accepted discipleship. And, you know, elsewhere in Discipleship in the New Age Volume 1, he discusses the kinds of experiences. I think there are five, the last two of which actually indicate that accepted discipleship has occurred. But, you know, they are meditative dream experiences. You know, finally, the possibility of a true interview in the Master's Ashram, which shows that accepted discipleship has occurred. Okay. His relation to the Master is the next and sometimes paralleling stage and involves the bringing together of the Master's consciousness and his own. So the accepted disciple, the accepted disciple becomes, okay. No, we got something wrong here. I have to, okay. Master's consciousness and his own. I think I better go back because there's some problems here. Okay. So the accepted disciple becomes an outpost of the Master's consciousness. This has to be slowly developed and consciously grasped with very interesting consequences, which obviously DK is saying you will have to experience these for yourself. excuse me. Okay, so all of this, his relationship to the Master is growing. He becomes an outpost of the Master's consciousness. It has to proceed slowly. The chance for glamour is pretty considerable here, and a lot of people fall into it. The stage, so we have two stages thus far. Once acceptance has occurred. So I'm just going to put this in. Once accepted discipleship has occurred, then the following. Okay. So first, so the lower mind becomes soul illumined and triadally impressed. That's the first thing that happens. The lower mind becomes soul illumined and triadally impressed eventually. Okay. Right. Then the Master's consciousness is growing within the disciple, whose consciousness becomes an outpost of the Master's consciousness, and later comes the stage when the disciple's consciousness can be gradually brought into rapport with the hierarchy as a whole. Okay, this is all as a result, all this as a result, all this following upon accepted discipleship. But first thy rapport with the master's consciousness, and only later with the hierarchy itself. It might be mentioned in clarification somewhat of this rather vague statement that the disciple is absorbed into the hierarchy and, at the same time, he assimilates in a new and mysterious manner certain united hierarchical impressions. You know, just as there is the thought and potential impression coming from any particular ashram, so we might say the same of the hierarchy as the greater ashram of Sanatkumar. So he assimilates in a new and mysterious manner certain united hierarchical impressions. The hierarchy achieves unanimity on many points and unity of vision on many points, not necessarily all. And these united impressions impress the disciple. These united hierarchical, HRL, hierarchical impressions impress the disciple being absorbed into hierarchy. Okay. The disciple by now has made his approach to the ashram. We would say because he is an accepted disciple and has demonstrated his ability to serve and thereby utilize any ashramic energy which he may contact and occultly include. So the approaching disciple must prove himself. He is slowly becoming aware of three vibratory impressions. How technical this really is. Which are slightly differing, though colored by the ray they express. First of all, he is aware of the vibration of his own soul. Now, you know, these require discrimination. And they are not exactly the same. Sometimes we tend to lump together things that are more or less the same, but in occultism we must be most carefully discriminative and tell one source from another. So, excuse me, first of all, he is aware of the vibration of his own soul. Then he registers the ashram, that of the ashram, in the early stages, focused for him through the mediation of some disciple senior to himself, and we might call this the chela in the light, perhaps. And finally, he becomes conscious of the vibration of the master. Now, all of these are along a particular ray line, but in terms of intensity, they are not the same, and in terms of quality, they are not exactly the same, and only our experience with these types of impression will help us with successful discrimination. Slowly, everything slowly, the wise use of slow action when dealing with the second aspect of divinity, and with the second ray, slowly he learns to distinguish them and know them as constituting three different channels, which whereby energy reaches him, his own soul, the impression of the ashram, coming to him perhaps through some representative disciple, maybe in the case of a little chelaship on the outer plane. But then again, you know, here's the thing. We're talking about this stage of accepted discipleship. And we can say this, though because we are speaking of accepted discipleship, the stage is later than that of little chelaship and chela in the light. So, it may be that even in the beginning of accepted discipleship, it's not the master's vibration, which is all the time making impression, but that of a still of a higher disciple, more interior to the ashram. And finally, the consciousness of the vibration, conscious of the vibration of the master himself, which cannot always be importuned. Slowly, he learns to distinguish them and know them as constituting three different channels whereby energy reaches him. They contact his consciousness upon the mental plane. Okay, so three types of energetic impression contacting consciousness of the disciple on the mental plane. Later, he discovers that contact with them is facilitated once he can register them consciously upon their appropriate plane and through the appropriate center. So it's not just the mental plane we're working on here. He learns to reach and touch a higher plane of origin and to receive the energies of that through his own appropriate chakra. It naturally takes time. DK is always counseling us to make haste slowly, and if it seems that we are suddenly increasing our ability, it will be because there has been adequate preparation. It naturally takes time to develop this facility, and until he passes through the third initiation, when major changes take place, we might say along the line of higher psychism, he is expected to retain the impression upon the mental plane and perhaps not be too involved with the planes of origin of these impressions. In other words, at least he makes mental note of what has affected him. The development of sensitivity to contact and the registering of that which is other than the self and yet which is the self itself, this is the mystery of identity, are part of the great science of impression. And also we will be reading Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle for further understanding. This development in the early stages of human evolution is carried forward through the medium of the five senses and is to be found in the animal kingdom also. This is a long paragraph, and if we're to confine this particular program, number 57, to roughly an hour, then we should end Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 57, and it's page 543, and where did we begin? This is always the search that I have here through my 543. Okay, just a couple of pages at a time, it appears. So, it's the end of number 50, program number 57, and we will say 541 to 543. 541 to 543, and beginning Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 58. Now, this has been concluded on the 3rd of February 2017, and we'll see when we can begin the next one. There are so many little things coming up, and it will be pages 543 to whatever we reach, two or three pages probably. So, we'll have a little bit of a review. He is an accepted disciple. He's serving within its ranks. He has the possibility of using the mind in a new way, and his relationship with the master is developing, and his relationship with the hierarchy as a whole is developing. And all of this is once accepted discipleship has occurred. Okay, friends. Well, you know, I'm excessively aware of the initial difficulty of this material. And it's not just a question of reading it once and hearing the words and even remembering the words. It's a question of really absorbing the process. DK, you know, doesn't write in a strictly linear manner, and we have to bring many things into relation with each other, things that have been mentioned earlier in his teaching, and we have to know where we are at any one particular point. Within the various areas of description, there are some linear passages that help us perhaps keep them in our concrete mind. But often it's just a question of becoming so accustomed to what he's saying and trying to say that we become more skillful in realizing where we are and where we are, toward what we are oriented and what process we are engaged in. And that takes a lot of familiarity. It's not just a question of the concrete mind memorizing something. You have to steep yourself in these things, and then they will become deeply meaningful. Okay, so we'll go on to number 58 when we can do so. Thank you for your studies. And number 57, the more I study this, the more I wish to study it to make it more and more authentically a part of myself and not just something that is sort of attached to my mind as a concept, but not necessarily integral to my life process. Okay, see you soon. Bye-bye.